Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Jenna Hua, and she is the owner of Million Marker. It is a company that looks at your toxicity levels in your body, and in particular, 13 metabolites of hormone disruptors. These are chemicals that get in there and mess with your hormone balance. Now, this is a big deal because if you have PMS, if you have PMDD, so really serious PMS, you have menopausal issues, you can't tolerate bioidentical hormones, you just feel your hormones are whacked and nobody can figure out what's up, you want to learn about this. Also, infertility, huge to look at toxins. And Jenna shared something super fascinating with me towards the end of the podcast, and I have a little clip that I want you to hear before we jump into the full podcast, because she is talking about how some of the clean companies out there say they're clean, and then they test the product, and turns out not so much, because they're not thinking about all of the aspects of transportation and everything. So you could be eating clean, doing all the things, and still have some toxicity is the point. I'm gonna let Jenna tell you in her words, and then we'll jump in to the podcast. Here it goes. So Jenna, we were talking about how the industry of the quote clean products has some negative, but let's not say negative, let's say a dark side to them in terms of testing and what you guys have found, because this is one of the things that I struggle with in my practice. I have folks that come into me and they're like, doc, I'm eating clean, I'm using all clean products. Why are my labs showing that I'm so toxic? What did you guys find?
It's a complicated topic. I mean, if you think about a product, how a product is made, first it has formulation, and then it has different ingredients, and then you have manufacturing, and then you have packaging. Every single step can contribute any potential harmful stuff or ingredient problematic stuff shows up in a product. It just, unfortunately, we don't have really good regulation on products. So many times we just don't know what goes into the product, even though the label says this product is free of this and free of that. It's also an accidental find for us. We've been doing human testing the last 3 years and a half. And we actually had customers who, again, you perfectly described it, already eating well, using all the good product, track every single thing that put in your mouth on their skin and pay close attention. And some of these people came back still after multiple tests, it still shows elevated level of certain chemicals, mainly phthalates and parabens. And we were really puzzled because, when we do the product audit, we pretty much read the ingredient label for you and point out what's bad. But our ability is still only limited to assessing that ingredient label without actually testing. So because we see people's elevated level, we were super puzzled. I'm like, okay, maybe just ingredient review. It's important. It's still really important to pick out good products and stuff. Maybe it's not enough because the ingredient label wouldn't tell you what exactly is this product made of, what kind of packaging, what's in that packaging, right?
Right.
And also what about the transportation conditions? For example, if the product is put in a plastic packaging, for example, and then during shipping, it's sitting on this pallet for days under the baking sun, what's going to happen to that product? Yeah. So this end consumer product, we just don't know. Some manufacturers do product testing. They do, they pull out the product from their manufacturing line, but it's not an end consumer product. It's not that product you're getting that you don't factor into the packaging, the transportation conditions and whatnot.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, long-winded story short is we end up doing some product testing just to see what's in product to help us figure out, okay, is there anything we can do more to bring more transparency and to bring safer product to our human users, and also helping them figure out where are these elevated level come from. So we tested about 70 products earlier this year, and the results were quite shocking because there are products that supposed to be clean, labeled clean, but not very clean. Product contaminated or adulterated with phthalates or paraben. And many times it's probably unintentional. Many brands probably don't even know that the products are contaminated. So unfortunately, this is what we found. So we're really hoping next year to actually launch a program to actually bring more transparency into what's actually in people's product. And then also help our human users to choose like truly safe products.
I think that's huge. I think that's huge because a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of hype in the products about it's clean, it's this, it's that. But, you know, sourcing, as you had mentioned before too, about the botanicals, you know, if sourcing's not on point, that's another thing. So it sounds like the big deal is to look at the companies who have thought about every single aspect of their product from like ground, growing it, to getting it all the way to the customer. And so those are the things we probably need to be really focused on.
Absolutely. Like one thing we're trying to assess product, you know, because everyone has ingredient label, right? And if you go to like a product website, if they're again, like you said, if they're very transparent about each of their process and they actually understand what they're talking about, that's pretty good. And then versus some product, they say, okay, we're like a toxic free product. This is clean and natural, but then they don't report all the ingredients, or they say key ingredients, or they don't like show where the product is coming from. Then that's kind of like a red flag of like a lack of transparency, because if you're actually making a good product, shouldn't you want people to know about it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, well, we will be looking forward to when it comes out that you've got your whole report on what we need to be focusing on for clean products. Hey there, Health Junkies. I've got Jenna Hua on today, and we are going to be talking about toxicity and how all these little buggers get into our bodies and wreak havoc. We don't even know about it. So, Jenna, welcome to Health Fix Podcast.
Thank you so much, Janine, for having me.
So, of course, when I looked at your website and I saw Million Marker, I'm going, oh my gosh. There's a million things that we could talk about all of these a million markers. But first, I want to know, how did you get into testing for toxins like BPAs and things of that nature in the body? What drew you to this industry?
So first of all, I love it how you got our name right away. A lot of people have told us maybe we should rebrand because Million Marker is such a mouthful. Like, it's too much. Is it Million Maker? But you got it all right. So the whole goal for naming it Million Marker is that we're hoping one day we'll be able to discover and develop a million biomarkers, so then people can really take prevention into their own hands and understanding their body biomarkers and prevent diseases. Mm-hmm. So I love it how you got it. How I got into this, both professionally as well as personally, kind of gave me the motivation of getting to setting up a company for testing. So professionally, I was trained as a dietitian and an environmental health scientist. Through my research, we did a lot of external exposure assessment. Well, that's really important. You know, given you and I have different genes, if we have the same exposure, same amount of exposure, same source, we would have responded very differently.
Yeah.
But we don't know that. So, you're just doing the external exposure assessment, you know, we can pair people with the latest technology, having, say, an air pollution monitor or using the greatest best app to track your diet. It's still, you don't really know what's going on inside of you. And that's really, really important to be able to look at personalized health based on your own genetic, your own physiology. There's a huge lack in research for even getting the data to do that. And also, you know, we're talking about environmental toxins, we're talking about chemicals. We scientifically have actually just been studying these chemicals one at a time. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, we're actually getting exposed to thousands of chemicals all at once. So if you don't have tools to actually screen what come out of your body, your metabolized meanings, which is the most downstream kind of end product, it's really hard to say, okay, how do these chemicals interact with each other? How do they interact with our genes to, you know, cause diseases? So there's so much you could do if you have such data to really advance precision medicine and personalized health. So that's kind of the professional motivation, because I think this is much, much needed to really realize our dream to have truly personalized medicine. Yeah. And then personally, I had a lot of fertility struggles myself. After 4 super late stage miscarriages, and the answer I got from the doctor was like, good luck next time.
Oh, that's the worst.
It's, Yeah, I know. It's not very satisfying. And we did all the tests that's available today, and everything came back normal and nothing was, you know, striking. And because I studied these things, I know environment could trigger. Environmental exposures can trigger certain things that we don't know. And when I went to the doctor to ask for an environmental toxin test, like test for BPA, phthalates, and these things, they told me there's no such test. The only test available is heavy metal. So like, this is crazy. This day and age, like, this is something, if people actually have the knowledge, knowing their body toxin burden, they can actually do something about it. And how could we not have the tools to do that? And, you know, genetic matters, but genetics is kind of loads the gun, but environment really pulls the trigger. So really understanding, like, how does the environment really impact our body? I just felt it's really, really important. Even, you know, the environmental trigger didn't cause my miscarriages and fertility struggles. At the time, I felt even if I just have this sense of assurance, I know this is not my issue, I'm doing everything I can, I think it was worth it. And I felt like, especially for people who are experiencing unexplained infertility, at least like rule this out, to have this peace of mind, I felt it was worth it. And, you know, kind of adding the scientific part to it, then I think, okay, since nobody's reading my paper, my academic papers anyway, so let's do something like more useful.
I like that. I like that. You know, that's the one thing about all of us geeky folks, you know, we have our papers, we have our research studies, and we know that, like, most people aren't going to read them, but this, you can get it in front of them. And yes, fertility, as we had talked before we hit record, fertility is kind of what brings a lot of ladies to the exploration of their health and figuring out, like, well, what's going on. But yes, I think that knowing what kind of toxins are building up in our system, what's going on, should be kind of one of our, almost like a regular screen every year to see what's going on. Like, you know, what's our state of the body, you know, what things are turned on. You know, a lot of people, you had mentioned the genetic thing, and you had said it kind of loads the gun, but the environment pulls the trigger. And for a lot of people, they're really focused on genetics, but I'm like, wait a minute, what happens downstream? Like,
exactly.
What's going on here? So tell us a little bit, because a lot of people are still, and I find this in my practice, a lot of people are like, why urine? It's, and I'll always say downstream, but I think I would love to have your kind of more techie, geeky, if you will, response as to why urine is such a good way to test what kind of toxins are in our body.
So urine is a good medium because it's literally the end product of your metabolism. So in urine, we can detect your metabolites. We can actually see what kind of food you've eaten and anything that comes through. And if you think about your body's detox system, you know, urine is a major, major detox way. You pee it out, you pee all the toxin out. And not only that, it's like, pretty much it could have disease biomarkers, it could have nutritional biomarkers, and then you could have exposure biomarkers. So urine is this medium that's like really, really important. You can even see DNA in urine. So it's like, it's quite useful.
I didn't think about that, but it does make sense that you could see DNA in urine. Are you, you know, in terms of your guys' testing, I'm guessing you're looking more metabolites, not necessarily going after the DNA per se.
Just the metabolites for now. And we make sure, you know, people care a lot about their privacy. We do too. And we want to make sure we're being a steward, a data steward, rather than a data owner. So we make sure that in our process, we have two separate consent. The first consent is information exchange, because we can't process your urine sample without a third party lab unless you let us exchange your urine with a lab, you know, that's mandatory. But we have a secondary consent, that's a consent for future research and discovery. And we have that optional. And so far, like 98% of our testers have signed the second consent because people felt it's useful, and it's like they could potentially contribute something. And that's what we're hoping to use it to look at additional metabolites. If we find anything, then we can, again, report back to people, because the technology for these screening is continues to improve. And we'll see more and more things that we can screen that can come out, and that could be really, really useful health insights for people.
I like that. I like that. Yes, it's always something when people hear DNA, you know, the flags go up.
Yes.
And so I like getting that out of the way right away. Now, your goal is 1 million markers. How many markers do you have right now in terms of
right
what
now we're testing 13. So okay. way far from 1 million, but we have to start somewhere. So we test for 13. That includes BPA, BPA alternatives like BPS, BPF, phthalates, parabens, as well as oxybenzone. So all of these chemical metabolites were tested, all very, very common hormone disrupting chemicals that occur in everyday product. So once you do the test, you understand your levels. And then we also wanted to provide personalized feedback to let you know which product you need to swap out, what are your lifestyle changes that you need to make to decrease your toxin load. And I think this is where it differentiates us from other tests, because it's not just a lab report. Because, I mean, while lab report is useful, having that number is useful, but not leaving people paying and actually have something tangible that they could do is really important to us.
Yeah. Yeah. So folks, just to give like a little bit of a picture of what John is talking about is if you use labs, something like, you know, the companies that I will use, very common companies are Great Plains Labs, Genova, things of that nature. I use those, but they don't come with the lifestyle stuff. You got to talk to me to give you that information. Whereas if you go to Million Marker with Jenna, you get information. Now, you guys also have, I saw folks that can are more or less like interpreters of the data and kind of can work folks through kind of with an analyzation and some coaching even. Is that what I saw?
Yes, we're planning to launch that early next year, because what we've found out, unless you're like a highly motivated and you already have some background knowledge, a lot of people actually want a bit more handholding. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to offer is maybe a simpler version of what you are offering, going into super detail. So at least we will conduct the lifestyle audit with people in person, so then they don't have to try to remember everything. And then the second is, once they get their report, we will walk them through their report, maybe pointed out, okay, what are the top three most important things you should make change now? And if people want to, you know, getting deeper, like, okay, I want to audit my entire like a kitchen, or I want to audit my entire house, and that's really having like step by step, day by day, a plan, then that's when we refer people out to practitioners, like experts like yourself, to really help people digging deeper. So we're kind of like as the, you know, the first pass.
Yeah, which I think is a great place, because I love it when people come to me with data. And, you know, 13 points on your way to 1 million, that is not a bad goal. Plus, also sometimes when we have multiple markers, it does get to be overwhelming. And 13 to me, it goes, I can deal with this for right now. And, you know, I'm guessing that when you get towards your 1 million, you're going to have ones that feed into each other. So they'll be kind of like an umbrella. So speaking of that umbrella of results, let's talk about BPAs for a minute and move into the things that you are looking at, because I think a lot of people are like, I know about BPA, but you also said some other letters after that BPA, and I never heard about those ones. So tell us a little bit about those BPA derivatives.
Okay, so BPA is like the poster child of endocrine disrupting chemicals. It's the most famous one, and everybody knew about it. And many people don't know, you know, what's BPA's impact on your body and then how it works and where it's from. But people know BPA is bad because you see your water bottle labeled BPA free. So anything is free. Okay, BPA must be bad for me. That's when people make a connection. So thanks to the conscious mothers, and then BPA got banned in baby products. Mm-hmm. So since the BPA ban, I mean, to backtrack a little bit, BPA is useful. I mean, it's cheap, it's useful. It preserves, and then it also makes plastic shatterproof. So it's a really useful material, but unfortunately, it is an endocrine disrupting chemical. And since BPA has been banned, what happened was that industry started making BPA alternatives. So literally swapping a molecule on BPA, so you could literally have from BPA all the way to BPZ or any combination of those. So we call these regrettable substitute, because what we found out is that these substitute, they have actually sometimes worse health impact than the original BPA. So we really don't want that to happen. Yeah, so BPA is a major one. You often find BPA in canned food or canned drinks. Canned drinks, I think it's a lot of people miss it. Like canned food, people understand, but canned drinks, like, okay, wait, my can's also lined. So don't be fooled when people say BPA free, because it could have other alternatives. Even in the EU, that BPA is actually regulated in packaged food, BPA free doesn't mean it's completely free. It's kind of similar, like, you know, here we really recommend people to read food labels, which you should also read product labels. Food label always say, you know, trans fat free, but trans fat free doesn't mean it's completely free. It's like 0.05 milligram per kilogram, which is still quite a bit. So if you're eating a lot of packaged food that even though it's trans fat free, because of that limit, you will still get it. Same issue as BPA, you will still get it. So the best way is to avoid this whole category altogether. Really, really important. BPA is also in thermal receipts. So, you know, not only you save your health, but try to save the environment too, because saving trees. So avoid touching receipts and avoid even getting the receipt. Have your receipt email it to you. So really, really important.
Ooh, that is a good reminder, because I think a lot of people, we talked about, it was kind of hot for a while, maybe a couple of years ago. And then I see now it's kind of like regressing. But you're right. If we can go after the, hey, be great for the environment thing, that can also kind of remind us and clue us into that. And that is one that I do need to keep reminding myself of, because you just, like, someone hands it to you and you just, it's like automatic. You just grab the stinking thing. So big one there, and huge on the BPA alternatives, because I was not aware that there was all the way to Z possibly, and that BPA free doesn't mean really anything these days. So, what a bummer. Now let's go into phthalates, because I find phthalates quite a bit when I do my urine screenings in folks, and let's talk a little bit where folks are getting those into their system.
So phthalates, there are actually two different kinds of phthalates. So in our report, we combine them because they're the sources are the different sources, but like multiple metabolites, they could have the same source. So there are two kinds. One is called low molecular weight phthalate. One is called high molecular weight phthalates. So low molecular weights ones are usually used in personal care products and supplements. Mm-hmm. And high molecular weight ones are usually in plastic. So anytime your personal care product, household cleaning product, anytime there's always read your ingredient label, anytime there's fragrance listed on the ingredient label, probably 99% of the time it'll have phthalates. So phthalates is it's this chemical that makes fragrance, like the nice smell, stick onto your body for a lot longer. So it's a very, very common fragrance ingredient. So if you want to avoid phthalates, please avoid any personal care product that has fragrance labeled. Always go with fragrance free. Many times that manufacturers will want to trick you by exchanging fragrance with aroma, something like that. So make sure you don't get greenwashed that aroma could actually be fragrance. And also knowing that unscented is actually a scent. So unscented. Yep. Well, unscented is a scent that could also have fragrance. And lastly, sort of on the fragrance topic, now a lot of people use essential oils as natural fragrance. This is a tricky topic. Essential oils are good stuff, except you don't really know oftentimes how essential oils are manufactured or distilled. Mm-hmm. So if you imagine like a facility that doesn't use food grade processing, they use say plastics distilling at high temperature, getting that oil out, and everything from the manufacturing process is going to be leached into this essential oil. And what's worse is that basically I think some stats were showing that only 50% of all the essential oil that we use today in the market are actually from natural sources.
Wow.
The other 50% is like a totally fun, like, fun synthetic. So the synthetically made essential oil will for sure 100% have phthalates. So, you know, before we can actually really address the supply chain issues with essential oils to really understand where they come from, I think people should also avoid any product with natural fragrance, because you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that a lot. And I'm asked that quite commonly, like natural fragrance. I'm like, fragrance is fragrance to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I didn't know that that's what the phthalates did, is that they helped it stick to you. Now that is a key factor, because that makes me think about like all the different, you know, not only essential oils, but all the different skincare lines, the different moisturizers, things of that nature, shampoos, all of it.
Yeah, and the phthalates is actually just one of the ingredients used in making fragrance. There could be up to over 3,000 other things, and we don't even know. So it's just best to avoid. Phthalates is something that we have been studied for a long time, but there are so many things that we don't even know. So again, if you know more, and then you can do better, and then so you can try to avoid it. So these two are like the major sources of low molecular weight phthalates. I want to also mention about a supplement a bit. So whenever you shop for a supplement, always look for vegetarian capsules. So phthalates have also been used as in vitamin capsules. So if it's not a vegetarian capsule, it could have phthalates in it. So again, like, please read your ingredient labels. These are where like low molecular weight phthalate come from.
Wow. What else in supplements? Let's go down that route for a little bit, you know, where people could be getting toxins. I think it's a hot topic. I've kind of went down that route with a lot of people over the years, is to, you know, the veggie cap versus this versus that. What do we do? Give us a little scoop of what you've got in your background in terms of what to be looking for supplements.
Again, nothing is for sure, because we don't have enough testing, but vegetarian capsule obviously is better than any other capsule. Mm-hmm. And I think a supplement is it's a hard topic. I mean, supplement is fine, but we often also got asked like the questions, what about my medications? Okay, then again, one is nobody is really addressing this. And then the second is if you have a life-threatening condition that you need to take this medication, and this medication is it's not vegetarian capsule, or it could have like a label like slow release or enteric coating on the label, they probably will have some phthalates or some content of phthalates. But because this is like, this medication is saving your life, right? Then you can't really avoid.
Right.
So in that case, there's not much you could do. But then this also makes decreasing your other exposure really important, because you just don't want to compound your additional exposures using these things. So again, like, look for a vegetarian capsule, avoid anything with enteric coating or slow release.
Okay. You know, this is really good advice, but also I think what you just said about balancing things out. Mm-hmm. If you know you have to take a medication, or you know that X, Y, or Z really works for you, and maybe it has some of these chemicals in it, you got to offset. And I think there's this drive for people to really want to be as clean as possible. And I've found some of my patients almost driving themselves nuts over it. And
yeah,
so,
that's not good.
No. And it's kind of one of those things where we just have to kind of find that balance and do some testing to know, you know, and sleuth it back out, right? If the testing comes out and something's really high, then we got to look back through what's the culprit in that case. I'm sure you found that too with what you've been researching over the years.
Absolutely. We definitely don't want people to be stressed out, because as we know, if you're stressed out, you get additional cortisol, and that's also a hormone. So, and then, you know, if you think about it, you're trying to detox here, but here you're increasing the bad, like stress hormone, that can be good. So that's really important. We really want people to make small steps, like take, you know, small steps, and then one thing at a time to address these things. I mean, living a low tox life, nobody can be toxin free, like nobody, because these chemicals are literally everywhere. So you really got to think about what you can do with your limit. And I think it's really good for people to think about where your most exposures are coming from. Obviously, you don't have to go today and just throw out all your products, but think about, you know, which product you actually use the most. Do you wash your hair every single day? And then do you do you use deodorant every day? And then you can think also about, you know, which product I use the most amount. Mm-hmm. So a shampoo compared to like a face serum.
Yeah,
it's a very different amount, right? Like for shampoo, you're actually using this big chunk and then like wash your hair. But then like face serum, you need like what, two drops? So that the exposure levels are really different. So if you are washing your hair every single day, you use this much shampoo, I would really look into shampoo that, hey, maybe if my shampoo has fragrance, my shampoo is not good, I would swap out right away. And also if you buy like a huge tub of shampoo, right, it lasts you for like 3 to 6 months, then you never have to buy it again. So like, and also like a laundry detergent, if you have babies and if you wash laundry, like do laundry every single day, you would get that exposure. And I would look at that ingredient label, I would change it right away versus something like, okay, I don't wear makeup. Maybe when I go out, I can rarely that, you know, I put on some lipstick, I use a little mascara. I wouldn't worry that too much because the exposures are way lower. So I wouldn't stress out too much about it. But if it's something that you use it every single day, take a close look, because these exposure we're talking about are these like really low dose exposure, but day in and day out, you just don't want to have this continuous exposure, and you just don't, it's not going to kill these, none of these chemicals are going to kill you tomorrow. You wouldn't even feel it, but you just don't know down the road, like, you know, 10, 20 years from today, what kind of issues it's going to trigger. And you just don't know when your cup's going to get full.
I mean, and that's, you know, that's the, we were talking about this before we hit record. That's the hard part to sell, you know, toxic, you know, evaluations, because it does take a while for these things to build up. But we do have cases in which we have the hormone disruption. And a lot of people, I think personally, maybe don't connect all of this toxic exposure with the hormone disruption. Yes, fertility is a hot topic in that realm, but I want to talk a little bit about, could we possibly have a lot of ladies with periods that are crazy and they're having PMS, PMDD, things of that nature, and we've got hormone disruptors going on. So talk a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, if you think about your hormone, right, and I think a lot of people don't make the connection how important hormone is. And anytime that people talk about hormone, they always think about fertility, but actually hormone is literally everything. It's the messenger system in your body. It works like an orchestra. It's like it has to be synchronized. And the other thing I think people don't really understand, or I guess first, is the hormone controls everything. Like that's talking about for your mood, for your digestion, your metabolism, your weight, your fertility, and your chronic disease. I mean, everything is tied to hormone. And hormone works in like such small amount that we cannot even see with our naked eyes, like how much, like the amount. So think about one drop of water in 25 Olympic size swimming pool. That's how much it requires for hormone to have an impact, like a downstream impact. So the bottom line is you just don't want to mess with your hormones. If you mess with your hormones, eventually you're going to feel it. So you don't want to do that. And then if you think about these chemicals, we call them hormone disruption chemicals, right? Or hormone disrupting chemicals, disruption. That means they really mess with your natural hormones. Your hormone works kind of like a lock and key. They really need to match. So when these foreign chemicals come in, they either change the shape of the lock or the key, they mismatch. So then you would have this overstimulation of hormones or understimulation trickle down to other kind of stimulation. So when people started feeling the symptom, it's already, you know, they probably already have a ton of exposures already. And also the symptom you feel might not be the only symptom, because if you think about the cascade of your hormone system, they're all interconnected. You're feeling one thing, you could also be feeling other things too. Or downstream, you would be feeling other things.
It's quite, if you really sit down and think about it and you look at your symptoms that you're having, and so folks who are listening to this, if you're having any like intense period symptoms, or you're having even menopausal symptoms, mm-hmm. or maybe you were even given bioidentical hormones and you're not adjusting to them well, one of the big things I'll always look at is going, all right, what's your toxic load? What is it? And we sleuth it out to figure out like what in the world is causing you not to be able to just process the hormones correctly, because it's impressive how many times, Jenna, seriously, that I go down to this route of the toxins and we look at it and we go, oh, you know, that's what was going on all this time when we were working, you know, we're kind of working against it. So I'd love to hear from you in terms of stories that you've heard from folks, or even your own personal story of testing. Did you find that there was one particular chemical that's like kind of that folks have that tends to be a little bit more elevated out of these 13? Is there a trend? Is what I'm getting at.
We see a lot of people with elevated phthalates, both high molecular weight phthalate and low molecular weight phthalates. I guess earlier I forgot to talk about the high molecular weight phthalates. You usually get that exposure from plastics. Sometimes plastic can be made of up to 80% either phthalates or BPA or both of them. So avoiding plastic, I mean, we have this complicated relationship with plastic. It's useful. You can never completely get rid of it, but I think people should start paying attention on plastics and then reduce, because again, you would get the exposures, even the good plastics. I mean, plastics are also not created equal. So it's always good to check that recycling symbol on the bottom. So usually if it's labeled like a 1, 2, 5, they're generally okay and it's recyclable, but the rest of them are not good, especially that number 7 is like it could be anything. So this is where people get a lot of high molecular weight phthalate exposures are fun. So we see these high exposures, and then again, like low molecular weight is from people's personal care product. Another chemical which we have not touched on is paraben. We also see people with a ton of paraben exposure. One major source obviously is from personal care product. The second is actually packaged food. Packaged food, oftentimes they also use paraben as preservative, except it's not even labeled as paraben. Because on personal care product, if you read your ingredient label, you see paraben, then please avoid that, right? And on the packaged food ingredient label, they actually label it as hydroxybenzoic acid. So it's like a completely different name. So if you don't even know that name, then you're just like, you don't even know to avoid it, right? So we see the spike of, you know, people who consume a lot of packaged food, they would also have paraben exposure.
Interesting, because I was thinking back to it in a marker, and this is, guys, I'm going to geek out for a second with Jenna. When we see benzoic acid showing up on a urine test, just straight benzoic acid, that's different than hydroxybenzoic acid.
Yeah, it's different. It's different.
Okay.
So, and then when you get the metabolites of paraben, it'll show if people actually had that exposure, but it's different from benzoic acid.
Okay. And then also in ingredients, because I think a lot of people might be like, oh no, I think my thing had benzoic acid in it. So guys, hydroxybenzoic acid, that one's a big one that I don't think a lot of people would have thought about, and also just in the background on that one. Now I also noticed one that's common in skincare too is the oxybenzone too. I've seen
oxybenzone is a UV sun blocker. It's a UV chemical sun blocker, and it's also a hormone disruptor, and it actually has been banned in Hawaii because it kills the coral reef. In my opinion, anything that's toxic to aquatic life, it can't be good for humans, because there are other ingredients, like, you know, ingredient formulator will say, okay, this is fine, we don't really have a lot of human study and it's probably fine for human, but we have a study showing that, you know, it's kind of toxic to aquatic life. I'm like, if it's toxic to aquatic life, it just can't be good for humans, so please avoid that. And oxybenzone is also a hormone disruptor, same impact as like paraben. Oh, and actually paraben, one thing I also want to say is not all parabens are created equal. So if you do our test, we report back 4 different kinds of parabens. So for phthalates, we combine certain metabolites because they're from the same source. And they have about the same kind of toxicity, but paraben is really different. So sometimes ingredient label will just label parabens. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it will actually list what kind of parabens it is. So there are 4 kinds. They are like a methyl, ethyl, propyl, and butyl. That's just signaling like how long, like the carbon chain, like how big is the molecule pretty much. But they're not, the toxicity is not the same. So methyl is way less toxic than butyl. Butyl is the worst one. So it's like a methyl is the least. And then when you go up, butyl is the last one is the most toxic. And one thing we really encourage our user to see is we have also seen people using these over-the-counter ointment or cream. Hydrocortisone cream is really commonly used, especially if people have eczema or have rash or allergy, they would use hydrocortisone cream. And that's one area we have not seen really good product without paraben in the formulation. Almost pretty much anything you buy, these over-the-counter cream, they always have some paraben in it. Unfortunately, that's because we don't have other good choice. I wouldn't stress out too much about it. But if you are trying to choose a cream, you have them side by side. If a product that has a methylparaben versus a product with butylparaben, then go with a methyl because it's way less toxic.
That's good to know. That's good to know. I never knew that. And now that I know that there's an option, or we've got that, then my other thought is I'm going to have someone compound something so that we don't have to put the paraben in there. And obviously paraben is more or less, its function is to help with stability, correct? Is that
preservative? It's actually multifunctional. It's mainly used as preservative, and it's also antimicrobial. So yeah, anything with water, like water-based stuff, you have to have some kind of preservative in there. Otherwise, it's like, I mean, mold is going to grow inside that product. So parabens are usually used as both preservative as well as antimicrobial.
Okay. Good to know. Because I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people who might be listening to this podcast might be using some of the higher end clinical lines for skincare. And there are a lot of the higher end clinical lines that I'm not going to knock them because they work for their job. Mm-hmm. But they do have the parabens, and then oxybenzone is in a lot of the higher end sunscreens that I know of that are out there on the market, but not in Hawaii. So...
yeah, they should not be using these. I mean, we have alternatives, and I felt that if people can avoid, they should avoid.
Yeah. No, that's what I would be thinking too. Now, speaking of alternatives, when you guys do consulting with folks, are you giving alternatives? Do you have an alternatives resource list?
Yes, we actually have a whole list of product we audited, we approved on our website. It's just under like resources, like approved product. So we curated that list. And then we recommend people to check it out. It's not a super overwhelming list. But also knowing that we have not collected a lot of customer feedback on these products. And one complaint we've had is, not all of these green product works for everyone. One biggest complaint we have had is like people are saying that all the green shampoos doesn't work for curly hair. That's like a one thing. But I think if you can use a better product, always try to use a product. It might just takes a little while for your hair to adopt, mm-hmm. to adapt to this new formulation, this new product. So I would encourage people to give it a try. Like on the hair topic, you don't have to wash your hair so often.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that I kind of, as I've gotten older, I've embraced like the once to twice a week hair wash. And so like you're saying, you can offset if you know that you're, use I happen to know that a lot of people use the brand Keratos for curly mm-hmm. hair. Random knowledge in the back of my mind, only because one of my best friends is a hairstylist. But it's one of those things where it's like, we can offset this stuff, guys. And so, yes. And that's the same thing I said about the skincare lines. Some of the most effective ones have some of these things in them. And so it's, my MO is if you have something that you really like, offset, like you said, but also just keep testing, make sure that you're keeping the levels in check. So I wanted to ask you about testing. How often do you think someone should test, like in between protocols to try to detox a little bit and go from there?
Yeah, so these chemicals, you can get rid of them, theoretically speaking, between 24 to 40 hours. These are transient chemicals we're talking about. So the moment you eliminate, I would say 3 days, you can retest. But I really encourage people, anytime you have any lifestyle changes, you move to a different place, any routine change, I would encourage people to test. In the beginning, we kind of talk a little bit about it, how everyone should be having access, like an annual check. Mm-hmm. I actually think this should be like our dental check, like, your dental cleaning your teeth twice a year, that's covered by insurance. I felt tests like this should be covered like by insurance, and people should be doing it twice a year. So just to keep yourself on track of making good lifestyle choices, making sure your toxin level is like under control. And just also like a good reminder, because this is a live course approach. Like this, you need to be detoxing every single day. You need to actually live a low tox lifestyle. And so I think by doing the test, then it's a nice reminder for people. And also, you know, not only it can help you discover, you know, what your toxin load, if it's high or low or medium, but it's also a good, nice tracking and reinforcement tool that, okay, if I'm actually doing all the right things and my toxin levels are not spiking up, then that's very encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I like the dental hygiene approach twice a year, or if you move, then recheck, look at things, or if you change a new protocol or try a new skincare line and you want to make sure that you're not overloading. I like this approach. I like this approach. Now, in terms of detox, I saw some things on your website with different notes about certain detox things. What's kind of your guys' stance? How are you helping folks in the detox in between so that when they retest, it's a lot less?
So right now it's mainly based on our report. You know, when people take the test, we actually ask them to complete an exposure journal because this allows us to pinpoint, because these chemicals are everywhere. If we don't really try to pin down like where this is from, it's really hard to give you that personalized feedback. Mm-hmm. So we ask people to complete an exposure journal, which asks about what kind of diet they're on, what the food they've eaten is a package, like what kind of cooking utensil they use. It's just a whole lifestyle audit. And then the second is we ask people to snap photos of their products simply by snap a photo, upload it to our app. And we actually audit every single product based on their ingredients and what we can find. And it's also really important because, you know, we're only able to test 13, but there are so many chemicals out there and so many are used in product. So besides reporting back the 13 that we test, we do a really big, like a product audit too. So any ingredients of concern that shows up in your product, we also let you know. So next time you buy a product, then you can also avoid these problematic ingredients.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. I don't know anybody who's doing anything like that at all in terms of a company that's also testing. That definitely sets you guys apart in my mind. I don't know anyone who's doing that. In fact, even myself, you know, with timing, I don't have time to look at all those things. Wow.
That's cool. Where we actually spend a lot of time right now. It's still kind of manual, but we're hoping in the future, as we accumulate more product, we audit more, we can help like semi automate some of these part. But I think that oftentimes people feel lazy. They do the test, but they don't really want to fill out the journal. But I actually think when people fill out journal, this is where they get biggest bang for their bucks, because this is where we spend a lot of time to actually help you do the research, understanding the product you're using and any more other problematic ingredients that could show up in your product that could actually impact you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a huge kind of insider tip for folks looking at your testing in particular, because I mean, I don't have the time to do that, but I'm guessing that with what you're doing and collecting in terms of data, you guys are creating a database, kind of like the environmental working groups mm-hmm. database.
Yes. So EWG is a great resource. So for anyone who's starting, that's a great resource, and searching for product, their database obviously is way bigger. And I think what also kind of helped set apart a bit from them is we really want to take the precautionary approach. So any ingredient, any chemical we see, whether it's animal study or human study, if there's any impact, health impact, whether to animals or human, we mark it. So we mark it to let people know. And we also use the latest research. And even if there's a product or ingredient with data gap, we let people know, hey, we actually don't know about this. When we don't know, it's probably better to avoid rather than and showing up that's okay. If we don't know if there's data gap, then it's safe. Data gap doesn't mean it's safe.
Right. Oh my goodness. That's huge, Jenna. I'm like sold already on what you're doing for looking at what folks are doing. So you guys, if you're listening and you're my patients, guess what's happening in my office? We're getting to be referring over to Jenna's crew to help us figure some stuff out here. Gosh, so much good information. Now, in terms of metabolites and expanding what you guys will be looking at over time, what does it look like for your guys' projection to add more metabolites in over time?
Yes, we're hoping to add more panels. A few things that people have asked. One, I think it's really useful one, would be air quality biomarker to see how much air pollution exposures you have. And this could also be very actionable while we have harder control over the external air, but at least our internal air, we can have control of. Yes. And, you know, because we spend what, like 80% of time nowadays indoor. So this indoor air quality is quite important. So if we can offer a test, then we can actually know, okay, first is like how much exposure you're getting indoor air pollution plus the outdoor. And then the second is, okay, if you actually use the air filter, is your air filter actually working? Is what you're supposed to do. So I think that's a really useful one. The second one, I mean, in our current audio, we're already always trying to push people to eat more organic. So organic, not only you have less pesticide exposure, again, you're helping with the carbon, climate change, and all the bigger like planet issues. And pesticide testing is also a great way to kind of push people to eat more organic. So we could also do that. Those are the two immediate panels that, you know, we've been thinking about. And it's also quite actionable for people to follow. And then the last one is really, we've been asked quite a bit, is the PFAS panel. You know, PFAS has been in the news a lot, forever chemical. The difference is that for many of the pesticides, pH, which is the air quality biomarker, you can test all of these in urine, but not PFAS. PFAS, you have to test in blood because there's a difference between PFAS and these other chemicals. These other chemicals that we just talked about, these are transient chemicals. Your body is able to get rid of them. PFAS is the reason we call it forever chemical, is once you get exposed to it, stays in your body like for a long time. So definitely want to avoid forever chemicals and any persistent chemical at all costs, because your body doesn't get rid of it. And not only that, if you have other exposures, it will actually add up. It has additive effect, so it could cause worse impact. While it sounds a little bit doom and gloom, this also makes avoiding transient exposures really important. Again, it comes down to you do what you can control. So really, really important. So PFAS testing is something that we've been asked, but we have not started looking into that. It's one is because we already been doing a lot of kind of education counseling on avoiding like PFAS exposures. And even if you do the test, you know that number, that it's going to stay there. Like there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hard part of testing something that you can't put an action to it. And that's one of the things that early day DNA testing frustrated me, is I'm looking at the stuff and I can't really do anything about it. Yes, we could try to prevent some things, but can't change your DNA. You know, now we have epigenetics, but before then there was not much I can do. Can you explain for the audience what PFAS stands for? Just in case anyone's not understanding.
Yeah, PFAS is a forever chemical. It's called perfluoroalkyl substance. And then it's usually using like nonstick coating of your like Teflon pans. And then also it could also make like a waterproof coating on your like, say outdoor gear. And again, it stays in your body for a long time. It's a hormone disruptor and it's also a carcinogen. So really, really important to avoid. And again, scientists also now trying to push like a PFAS be regulated as a class rather than one single PFAS at a time, because we had the lesson learned from BPA, you know, like how BPA alternatives being made. So PFAS right now, I think a lot of scientists are trying to push the government to regulate as a whole class. So then there will be no such chemicals being used in products.
Nice. Gosh, I hope that pans out. I hope that pans out to help us.
Absolutely. So this also makes really important, besides, you know, Teflon pans and looking to your outdoor gears, is we have seen a lot of PFAS contamination in water. So this makes it pretty important to get a water filter. So any filter is better than no filter, but if you can actually get hold of a reverse osmosis water filter, go for that, because that will like pretty much filter it out. All these forever chemical, heavy metal, pesticides, as well as some of the BPA phthalates we're talking about.
That is huge. That is huge to get the water filtration system. I'm big on water. I'm big on air filtration. What you can control, folks, obviously we can't control a lot of things, but what we can, that's where we need to be. And this is where Jenna's helping us to control things because we can see what our exposures are. So folks can find you at millionmarker.com. And we've got the list of the resources there as well. Are you guys on social at all? Instagram?
Yes, yes. We're pretty active on social because education is really important. Even if you don't want to buy a test, like, you know, follow us. And then we always give tips about how to avoid certain toxins. And then we invite also other folks like yourself to come on to educate people because, again, knowledge is power. Only if you know more, you can do better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What is your Instagram handle, Million Marker?
Yes, we're million_marker. Okay. And we're also, yeah, we're active on Instagram and Twitter.
Okay. Okay. Twitter, same thing?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Okay. I made notes, guys. So we got it there. That'll be in the podcast notes at drjkrausng.com. Jenna, thank you so much for coming on, enlightening us. I've learned quite a few things and I'm excited to check out your testing some more and start recommending it to my patients. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. And also thank you for what you do.
Hey, Health Junkies. I wanted to create a little bit more community around the podcast. I wanted to make sure I answered some questions, but also opened up the conversation so that folks can get what support they needed and questions answered around the topics that I am bringing up in the podcast. Because I added the Wednesdays that are more mindset work, I definitely thought, you know what? Let's get a community going. Let's do this. So you can head to clever.fm/thehealthfix and join in on the community today. I look forward to seeing you in there and getting to know you better.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.